goal of this podcast is to help you break in and thrive in advertising. And we do that every single week by sharing the stories and advice of those rocking it on the other side. And this week you will learn from Tim Roan. Tim Roan is the chief creative officer at Magera Jesse. Magera Jesse, this is our first ever episode featuring somebody from Magera Jesse. They're a independent shop based in Austin, Texas. And Tim has been in the business for quite some time, and he's one of the chillest guests. I love his personality. I love our conversation here. I'm actually going off script. I'm not reading from a paper for the first time because that's how natural he is. And I felt like I needed to match that energy before you start listening to this. He'll give you the advice. He'll tell you about Magera Jesse. He'll tell you about the time that he left the agency side to work client side at Lyft, his experience there, and then how he jumped to Magera Jesse, where he's working at today. I speak to a story that's personal to me in this. One of my first advertising assignments in college was Yeti, which inspired me. And you'll hear how Magera Jesse was the first real agency that they had and grew that business. So Magera Jesse, Austin, Tim Roan, CCO, lock in. You're going to learn a lot. He's going to ease your fears as well, which I love that. But we also give you some tangible advice. You're going to want to connect with Tim to do that. At some point in this episode, he tells his email, or we have linked his LinkedIn in the description. You can go there and try to connect with him too. But if you leave 5 stars and a nice review on Apple Podcasts, then reach out to me, Gino Schellenberger, on LinkedIn. I'll try to be your personal connector, your accomplice. Now on with the show. This is the Breaking and Entering Advertising Podcast. And as usual, I'm your accomplice, Gino Schellenberger. Kick it, Mikey. All right. Tim Roan, welcome to the Breaking and Entering Advertising Podcast. How the heck are you today, sir?
I'm living the dream, Gino. Living the dream.
You got a nice, this is a podcast, but I have to call this out. You have a nice hat on. It just says vodka.
That's right. Because one of our clients is D. Betty Vodka. And I believe in the power of merch. And the more that we can wear the brands that we love with a little sense of humor, it's just free advertising walking around on my head.
Your forehead.
That's right.
I love it. So D. Betty Vodka, I definitely want to talk about that. I want to talk about where you're at today because you're the chief creative officer at Magera Jesse. And correct, that is an Austin-based agency. Correct. I have not interviewed anybody from Magera Jesse, so I'm excited to talk with you to learn about this wonderful shop that you guys got going on and all your advice along the way.
Right on. So where do we start?
We can start with who are you? And tell me about tell me about Magera Jesse.
All right, cool. So yeah, Tim Roan, Chief Creative Officer, Magera Jesse. We like to say we're in Austin, USA, because over 25 years ago, Mark Magera, Brian Jesse started this shop. It was this beautiful beacon of creativity in Austin, Texas. And but the world has changed. We all know, hashtag COVID. We did our best. There was an opportunity while a lot of agencies were figuring out, how is this going to work? We want it to be like the way it used to be. And right out of the get-go, leadership said, people can be great from anywhere. And that decision was made. We call it being unbound. At least a third of our shop does not even live in Texas. They're scattered all over the country. It's just meant that people can be great from anywhere and we can find the most interesting people, whether they want to live in Austin or not.
I like that. Yeah. It does worry me a little bit as somebody that started with the pandemic, in my first job, I get worried about those early talent and, you know, developing those creative skills for art directors and junior copywriters out there. You know, I want to look out for them, make sure that they're developing online as well as it would be in person.
Yeah, that's probably the biggest conversation for anybody who cares about career development, right? Because when I was a junior, when anybody breaks into the business, you know, you would see leaders dealing with conversations, problems, client concerns in real time right in front of you. And there was a lot of modeling opportunities. You could see how true leaders handled themselves, you know?
Yeah.
You could also hang out by the printer and see all the really killer ideas that people better than you were coming up with.
Right. And you get invited into like a pitch or like a brainstorm session, right?
That's right.
You can stumble your way in. So what do you, I mean, now that you're a chief creative officer, so you don't have to worry about the development as much.
No, that's all I care about. It's not about me anymore. It's about everybody else. I'm managing everybody's careers. I want them to be I got to find the greatness in everybody. And two, I want to make them so good that they can leave at any time.
I like that. That's a good,
But I want them to struggle with, oh my God, I'm making the best work and I love it here and I'm having fun. Why would I want to leave? But I got to put everybody in a position where they're marketable and they can go anywhere and do whatever they want to do because life is funny and we're all on a journey. So no, it's all about making sure everybody's working on things that can bring out new skills in them, things that are going to make their portfolio more diverse. You know, advertising is perfect for ADHD butterflies, you know? We get to work on one assignment one day, another assignment another day, a different category, different kinds of brands. Look, to your original prompt, how do we make sure people are growing up while they're alone? You know, and a couple of things we can do. One thing we do is we have a really great Unbound program where we bring everybody to the agency a few times a year, just so we get that camaraderie and we get to laugh with each other and spill beer on each other's shoes and have workshops and really hang out. I mean, in all honesty, almost all of my best friends are all people that I've met in ad agencies over my career. So there is something real to everybody hanging out in the good times and the bad and coming out with real relationships, real friendships.
So you bring people in a couple times a year, you said. I like that. That helps a lot. I'm sure you're very open to any questions online via Teams or Slack, whatever that program might be.
Oh, yeah. It's an open door policy all the time. Like, look, every culture has their own communication. Like, we're not an email culture. We're a Slack culture.
Hangover, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, what's really nice is we have a whole bunch of hilarious Slacks that are going on through the day. Like, we have dedicated Slacks just to great work. Like, what's work out there that all of us admire and envy, right? And everybody's posting and commenting on that. We have a Slack called Quote Wall, which is just dumb, funny things that people say in various meetings. And,
overheard,
you know,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that need shout outs. But like, you know, we're not so big that I have an open door policy. Anybody can get time on my calendar. And I'm always trying to find time on everyone's calendar just to check in on people and see where they are.
Yeah. What now? Tell me, you say you're not that big. So independent for sure. You guys still independent?
Thank God. This place has all the things I've been looking for over a long career. And one of those things was working at an independent shop. You know, it's got a really interesting pros and cons. We are run by human beings, you know, versus corporate policy. Human beings make mistakes and are fallible as long as we can learn from them. So, it's one of the pluses of why I'm here.
Got it. And can you talk about some of the clients that you guys have? Is that legal?
Yeah, sure. It's legal. I mean, we shout about them probably on every other media channel. Well, this agency has got some really long relationships, man. Like,
I like that.
Which you rarely see in the business. You know, this is, Gino, we're in a dumb business model. It's an exciting creative career and wrapped in a dumb business model, but we're really lucky. So this business was founded on, like, the biggest account that's been around for the longest has been Frost Bank, which is a Texas bank. They're known for, like, ridiculously amazing, service. They, like, crazy stories of how they go above and beyond to, like, connect with their customers and help their customers. And then because of Frost Bank work, which was really weird and really unusual and unlike any other bank advertising, then the agency won a beer account, which was Shiner Beer, you know, from Texas. Usually it's the other way around. You do really fun work for a beer and then maybe you win a bank. And then, a lot of fame, a lot of communication arts and award shows over the years through Shiner. Then, we're over 20 years with Whataburger, which
Holy cow.
Yeah. Which is a cult fucking burger, joint.
Delicious.
Yeah. Wildly. What's interesting about a lot of accounts we have, there's people online who are already defending and shouting about the brands that we've helped build. And there's a lot of fanatics on Whataburger.
Oh yeah. So you've been with them for 20 years.
Yeah. And then, probably one of the, additional good relationship stories we have was Yeti, man. I mean, when Yeti first came to McGarrah Jessee, they were a small, company that was just sort of direct to consumer, selling really expensive coolers.
What year was that? Around
2014,
2015, 2016.
Yeah, maybe
2013,
maybe 2014. We're going to do our research, Gino. Sorry.
Yeah, mid 2010s.
Mid 2010s. And then, I go back in the archives and look at all the work that we did for them. And there was, like, original long form content, filmmaking, you know, and it was uniting. It wasn't just for people who love to fish or people who love to BMX bike or people who love to go camping or people who love to hunt. It was finding those commonalities between all these people who are just
it's
restless,
great.
You know?
Were you the first, was McGarrah Jessee the first agency of record or just an agency, whatever you want to call it?
Yeah. And it skyrocketed from a $100 million brand to a $1 billion brand.
Oh my gosh. I love it.
I wrote our best work.
Yeah. It was 2016, my freshman year of college, and my first advertising assignment, it was 150, advertising 150. We were all tasked with finding a brand and doing, like, an analysis. Like, why is this brand marketing differently or advertising differently? And I wrote about Yeti.
Right.
And that was, like, my first assignment. And I remember, and also it was, like, 2016, the craze, it was just all over. Like, it was nonstop, like, Yeti, Yeti, Yeti. And so I just remember being, like, enamored with the brand and how it developed, and that really kickstarted my love for this industry. So it's probably because you guys, in addition to their team.
Yeah. And it all started before my time. I cannot take credit, but it was one of those, you know, like, obsession is a two-way street, man. Like, what you try to do is create some sort of obsession for a brand. But, like, when you got a great client in the building, the agency becomes obsessed and everybody comes out of the woodwork and they're like, I want to get on Yeti. Before you know it, the entire agency is hitting it from all angles. And luckily it was a client who wanted all that and saw incredible growth from that and saw incredible communities being built up online around Yeti. And look, man, whatever business we think we're in anymore, I mean, we could use the word advertising all we want, but, like, it's not just ads, you know, like, let's just say creative that serves business, you know? we did the, at one point Yeti's like, hey, maybe we need a flagship store, which is in Austin. And the agency we went whole hog and created the architecture plans and proposal and the entire retail experience. And like, what do you call that? Is that advertising or is that brand building?
It's a good question. I love that you guys worked on that.
Yeah.
Outdoor Voices, I see Shiner, Skinny Pop, Lyft, Fender, Brooks, Deep Eddy Vodka now. It's a great suite of clients you guys got.
Yeah. I mean, we've been working with Fender. We had a really interesting project relationship with them within this past year. You know, you're like, I mean, how many people who work in our business are musicians or want to be musicians? So work on a brand like that was amazing. What's kind of weird, is if you look at my resume, so at one point I left advertising agency land and I went in-house as a client at Lyft. And
right,
so
I was bring that up.
Yeah. Yeah, I was, so I, cause you know, I hadn't been nervous in a long time and I was like, oh man, maybe I'll fail. But I was also really interested in something new. It was still creativity, but just from the inside. And we hired Megara Jesse to be our agency to help us with a bunch of things that were just befuddling us. And they handled it so creatively, such fun people, that lo and behold, a couple years later, they called up and they were like, hey, do you want to come work here? So it's this weird symbiotic relationship.
Oh, so you were
I was the client. I was the client who hired Megara Jesse. And then years later, we dug working with each other so much, they brought me over to work at the agency.
And this happens. I mean, these relationships, like the poaching, I guess, whatever you want to call it, or relationships and that get the pull between brand side and agency side. I love those stories, obviously.
Yeah,
like
it wasn't poaching, it was all good. And honestly, it was where I was in my career and in my life as well too. Like I learned a lot, you know. So I went to Lyft, and then after Lyft, because COVID really rocked everything, so then I went to Away, the hipster luggage suitcase company based
yeah,
out of New York.
Yeah.
So I worked there in-house and we had a lot of fun. And then, in all honesty, I learned a lot, but I missed my people. I missed, weirdos and, oddballs and pirates. And, you know, there's something about we're really lucky working in agencies because it's a collection of creative weirdos, man. And, you can be yourself every day and you can laugh every day. And, I missed that juice of being surrounded by those kinds of people.
I gotcha. And when did you break in or what was that agency?
Oh man, it's a long tale. All right. So I'll try to give you the shorthand. You know, it's funny. I'll say this story because I will always meet with anybody trying to break into the business. I get a lot of DMs and a lot of emails from young people.
Yeah, you answered mine.
Well, yeah, that's true. Right away.
It worked. People always ask me, how do you network? I go, I just write a LinkedIn request or I'll just send a note on LinkedIn. And like, oh, everybody talks about networking. I'm like, yeah, that's pretty much what I do is just a LinkedIn note.
And how hard is it for any of us to say howdy hi back, you know? So there's always a lot of people who are fresh out of ad school and they're like, man, this business is really hard to break into and I'm getting really impatient. And I'm like, well, let me tell you a story about patience. So like my journey was long and arduous and circuitous and a little David Ogilvy-ish in that. All right. When I was 16, I loved advertising so much that I had a subscription to Ad Age, you know? And like, I knew when I was a teenager because I fell in love with radio and I grew up outside of New York City. And at that time, New York City was just this hotbed of really funny, really clever. And a lot of it came through in radio. It was a heyday of creativity in New York. And I was like, I want that. I want to do that. So I subscribed to Ad Age, but I didn't know anybody. I didn't know how to get into the business. And I didn't know if there was any ad schools or anything. And, So I went to college at a little nothing school in Vermont, and I took marketing courses and minors in American Lit because I thought I'd need to be a good writer. And then I put together a portfolio all on my own of what I thought great ads would be. And I was always a student of advertising. Like, you got to collect the annuals. You know, you have to fucking see what's winning at one show and pan and. And Minneapolis has a great annual called The Show, you know, and that's where I think some of the best writers come out of. And I put together a portfolio and I went to New York and I got some meetings with some creative directors and I was laughed out of all of their offices. I wish I had my original portfolio because I would love to see where I started, you know, and I'm not hard on junior portfolios, man. You know, when I look at student books, all I care is there one thing in that book that you go, man, I wish I thought like that, you know, mm-hmm. like, I don't hold the whole thing up. It's just one stroke of brilliance because none of us bat 1,000, you know?
Right.
And if there's just one, there's one thing in there, you go, that's pretty smart, man. All right, let's keep talking. So anyway, I didn't have any of that in my portfolio. So but I knew I wanted to be in the ad world. I knew I wanted to be in New York. So I got a job as an assistant at Lintas Worldwide, which doesn't exist anymore. And then I got a job as an assistant at Delafamina McNamee, which became Messner, Vithierry McNamee, Schmetterer, Euro, RSCG, which then became Havas. So you and I are connected, Gina.
Hey.
But I was an assistant for account people. And so here I was wanting to become a copywriter. And I was an account person for 3.5 years. You know, I was an assistant, then an account coordinator, then a junior AE, you know. And I took night classes at SBA, and Sal DeVito told me I was shit, and, you know, balled up my ads on the wall and threw them out the window. And I probably was shit. And then I was like, oh, I dealt with this. So I quit, and I started a garden design business because that's what we all naturally do, right? Garden design. And then I got close to nature and had my hands in the dirt and learned a lot. And then did that for 3.5 years. Then I was like, what have I done? And so I sold my half of the business. And then I started as an account person at an agency called Partners in Shivak, which then became the Wolf Group. And I was running Miracle-Gro and Scotts because I had gardening experience. So if you add, and I did that for 3.5 years, if you add all that up, that's 10 years of not being a copywriter,
wow.
Person, gardener, account person. And then there was, it was December of 1999. And, I was interviewing as an account person. I think I was like account soup by then. And I was interviewing as a junior copywriter. Oh, I went to Ad House and,
yeah.
What's his name? Tom. There was a creative director from Lowe when Lowe was really kicking it, man, in the late '90s, early aughts. And he gave me the best piece of advice I ever got. He was like, Tim, you're coming up with good ads here, but, you know how you think and you talk and what you think is funny? Do that. He's like, be you, because nobody else can be you. And like in a short period of time, I found my voice was right inside of me. And so I just started thinking and creating through my voice, which made people smile. So there I was in December of 99. I was like, I want to be a copywriter when 2000 rolls around. Because 2000 meant a lot back then. You know, it was like the turn of the century. So, I got a call in one day to be an account supervisor at a really interesting agency at the time. They still are, DeMossimo. And it was for a pretty good salary, man. And these were the dot-com halcyon days, man, you know? And then I got a call to be a junior copywriter at FCB New York on the same day. And at the time, my wife and I were living the New York lifestyle. We were a little bit in debt, and we had just charged our wedding. And there was this big salary to be an account person and this tiny salary to the difference was $130,000 between these two salaries.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. And I was like, I always wanted to be a copywriter. It'll figure itself out. I'm not about the money. I'm about the opportunity. And she was like, you're right. And I took the junior copywriting job. And
That's very brave.
Yes. But, you know, I've tried to figure out like how we grow in this business. I just look for curiosity and ambition in other people. I guess because that's something that sort of drove me a little bit.
Worked for you.
But I was also a little lucky too. I had worked in various agencies for 7 years. So I understood how agency life worked. I understood the process that we need to get to great work, to get in front of clients. I understood production and media comms and strategy and all those roles. So I wasn't fresh off the boat from.
No, you knew what was going on.
Yeah.
You have to, if you're in an account, to understand the process that probably made you a better copywriter.
Yeah. And you also understand what clients are thinking and fearing and feeling, juggling and dealing with.
So you know how to push, you know, what they like, what they don't like. And
yeah,
important.
But I'm not sure right out of the gate because, you know, creativity is so personal, man. Like, it's us. It's how we would solve an assignment. And, you know, when you first get going at it, I was not good. I had good creative directors who got me to become better. Probably the biggest thing I learned being a junior in the business was because at first I sensed everybody knew that I sucked, you know, and then I was like, and then I watched other competent teams create. And then I was like, I get it. The clients want us to be right. The clients pay for us to be right. And if you embrace that feeling, when you walk in, the clients aren't suspicious looking at your ideas, trying to find faults and cracks in it. They're going, I really hope these people have the idea because I have to, that's why I hired them to solve this. And that was a big unlock for me in my business, in my career, and finding the confidence to know that what I was coming up with could be great, you know?
Oh, I like that. Interesting. Very. What would you say now, looking back, how would you have done this differently if you wanted to expedite the process and break into a junior copywriting role right away?
I don't regret anything. But look, my path is unusual.
Yeah.
I think I admire any person who's trying to break into the business, reaching out to all the people who they think can help them break into the business.
Yeah.
And like, you never know who's in a good mood that day and who's got some free time and who's going to pick up the phone or hop on a Zoom with you or bring you in to talk with you. You just got to be like, I don't follow agencies. I follow creative directors.
Man, right.
You know? And so, because they're the ones who are going to make or break your career. So that's one part. Find your heroes. See who you really admire. Track their careers. And then pursue those people.
Because mm-hmm. The agency names stay the same for the most part. But the people within it change all the time.
Yeah. And you could go to a hot shop, but it's already crested. Our whole business is cyclical, man. And mm-hmm. those people that made it hot might have already left to another place.
Exactly.
I would give another piece of advice, which is most advertising resumes tell stories. You can see what somebody prioritizes when you look at where they started, where they went next, where they went after that, where they went after that. Were they chasing the money? Were they comfortable with mediocrity? Or were they chasing creativity and being great and real challenges? So I would say, as hard as it is to break into this business, I don't care where anybody gets their first job, right?
Love that.
It's because no one's going to hold that against you. Everybody knows. No. Everybody knows what it's like to get into the business. You go, oh, who cares if you started there, but you're reaching out to other places. What did you do while you were there? What can you say you learned from there? Did you put anything in your portfolio from there? Just keep working on spec work where you were there. It's Where do you want to go as your second agency? Then starts to tell everybody what you prioritize, what you stand for, and why you're in the business.
I love that. Yeah, sometimes your first job, you know, you don't really get to pick your first job. Your first job kind of picks you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's a whole lot of luck. This business is right place, right people, right time.
And something that I kind of tell students that I've learned from these conversations is the portfolio portion of this. Copywriters, art directors, strategists specifically. If you put in, and I get worried about undergraduate students today, Tim, and I don't know if you share this. I get worried that their portfolios, they neglect it, whether or not they're studying advertising or they're not working on it, like their spec work throughout college. And then they realize their senior year, second semester, senior year, that they do want to be art directors or copywriters and they don't have any spec work or they haven't put thought into it. And then they kind of go down this path. Do I go to portfolio school? Do I work on my own? Do I break into account? Do I try to transfer over? So I always try to, when I go to these places, I tell them, this is copywriting. This is art direction. Here are the best books right now. If you look at VCU, Miami.
Oh, that's great. I love that you
do that. I'm like, you need a benchmark against the best.
You got to know who you're competing against, man.
And they are spending $60,000, whatever that amount is, $60,000 for a master's degree. And they could be, you know, 10 years older than you. So I try to just benchmark it. And like, this is what you're up against. Like, work hard. You have the time now, whether, you know, take a summer. Don't worry about the internship as much. Like, build that out. Is that?
Yeah. Look, you're either obsessed with it or you're not going to do well in it. And
right. Like,
it's not about what the teachers give you. It's what are you pushing for yourself? I mean, years ago when I was at FCB New York, this was the beginning of the Brazilian art directors.
Oh, you know? Yeah.
Yeah.
They're good. Yeah.
And, you know, you started to realize that all the award shows were starting to get won out of a few Brazil agencies. And some of the top agencies in America were like, we need to get those people. And,
yeah,
you know, Brazilian art directors are just, I'm constantly amazed. I was lucky to have a great one as a partner. They're one part art director, one part designer. They're prolific. Like, it's funny. I was giving a talk to the creative department a few months ago called What's It Mean to Be a Professional Creative? And it's not about creativity. That's table stakes, man. You either are or you are. It's budgeting your time to focus, right? At being prolific, showing up with more than what was asked for. That's what freelancers are. And if you conduct yourself like a freelancer when you have a full-time job, you're going to do really well in this business, right? But years and years ago, a Brazilian art director was hired at FCB New York, and he sat in his cubicle and he looked around at all the clients we had in the building, and he came up with fantastic visual award-winning ideas for a bunch of clients, and he would pin them up in his cube, wallpaper it with ideas we all wish we came up with. And then he would take them down at the end of the month and start all over again and come up with more. And like,
oh, I love that.
Yeah.
That's insane. I love it.
And while some of us were over at the ping pong table, he was like, if that's greatness, I want to be more like that person, you know?
Yeah.
And so like what we all have to realize is we're never done, man. Our portfolio is never done. You got a couple of great things out of whatever level of schooling you went to. You should be working on 8 more things than for every one thing a professor gives you, because you're constantly, what's my worst piece? Let's get rid of that. What's my next great piece? Let's put that in. It's really challenging when you when you talk to juniors and they're like, no, this is my book. You're like, and then you're just starting, and like, what? Push yourself. What do you be passionate about this, man?
Yeah, it's a wake up call. It's definitely a wake up call for some people.
And but I love that you're showing people this is who you're up against. Like they have to see the.
And
like,
I tell them
who are the stars of each advertising program.
And Tim, I tell them I get on these networking calls and they go, I'm not really sure. I want to be a copywriter or art director. And I'm like, well, if you're telling me that, first off, it tells me you're probably not good at either.
Right.
If you're a senior, like I could be a copywriter, art director full time. Well, now I'm worried. Now I'm super worried.
You have to be passionate about art direction. You have to be a student of art direction. You have to be somehow understand the basic tenets of design to be an art direction. Yeah. Like, you love to think visually. I will say this. I've been very lucky in that I've had a couple of double threat partners in my career.
How many?
A lot. Art directors who can write.
But not, never as juniors, right? I mean, maybe there's a unicorn here and there, but that doesn't happen until like a couple of years later, right?
Right, right. I mean, it's funny. Once you get to creative director land, people are like, hey, well, what are you, an art director or a copywriter? It's like, I think I should have taste and an eye and an understanding of both, but I can't do both. I mean, I'm a copywriter by trade, you know?
Yeah.
But it's wonderful having an art director who's a better writer than you. Because it scares the bejesus out of you, and you want to show up with the best. You have to be better than your art director who can write.
That's a good point.
I can't understand anybody who goes, I don't know if I'm going to be a copywriter or an art director. I think you're either drawing and doodling and making and editing and painting at an early age, and it's a natural progression from fine arts into art direction. Or you fell in love with words and the power of speech and how to write, and then how to write great. My thing is write it perfectly and then cut it in half, you know, like how to edit your writing, how to write in a human voice, how people talk, you know, how to make our clients' brands feel human and versus corporate. So.
I mean, I'm looking at the hat now. It just says vodka on it. I like that. I'm sure you probably started with Deep Eddy vodka. Yeah. Let's cut that.
Brevity. Brevity.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it, Tim. Anything else that you were dying to get out to the people out there? I'm just going to ask you, how could people reach out to you? But I want to make sure you got what you needed out there.
Yeah. You know, it's funny when you first reached out a couple of days ago and you were like, what do you want to talk about? Because everybody talks about the same thing in this business, you know? And honestly, something that has been really important to me in the past 10 years, and it takes working at a bunch of agencies for a bunch of different people, working for different titles, working for different leaders, different kinds of shops, different kinds of accounts. When I came to McGarrah-Jessee, it had crystallized for me what I wanted all of us to do, what journey we wanted to be on. And I simply put it as, let's have fun and make fun things. And I was like, raise your hand. Why'd you get into business? You know, like, sure, the business changed, and business will always change, and we'll adapt to it. But like, kind of what we were talking about earlier about, I miss my people. Like, we're very lucky that we get to be around fun, funny, interesting, creative people. I mean, how many headquarters of clients have you walked through on your way to a presentation and just saw very sad, quiet cubicles, you know, and you go, I'm glad I didn't get a job in this career, whatever that category was. And I feel like a lot of agency life stopped getting fun over the past 6, 7, 8, 9 years at a lot of agencies. They're that holding company structure. Look, we have to make money, but things became more financial decisions than people decisions. There's a lot of pressure to be a lot faster now, you know? And it's cool. We got a lot of the tools to be faster now. But there was a lot of undue pressure and a couple of bad bosses along the way as well, too. You know, like bed checkers, you know, hey, why isn't everybody at the agency late at night? Like, Bim, people are being great somewhere else. And there's some silver linings to COVID. People understood there should be a real work-life balance, you know? So that to me was, I want everybody to enjoy coming to work, to know they're in a safe space, to not be living in fear. I mean, Gino, how many people have you met in your career who every day think it's going to be their last day and they're looking over their shoulder, you know?
Yeah, that's the thing.
Yeah. And And I just want people to know, hey, this is where you're going to make mistakes, but like, and we all make mistakes. This is where you're going to be able to shine. Let's push you to fucking shine. It's been the opportunity. The place already existed. I mean, that McGarrett Jesse is a place that was on my radar years ago when I was in New York, because they were really crafty, man. And like there's so little craft left in this business because there's not time for it or clients don't want it. And, you know, part of like, I love the writing that was always coming out of McGarrett Jesse. I love the design and art direction that came out of McGarrett Jesse. And they're one of the few agencies that has a bona fide standalone design department.
Yeah.
And each account has designers embedded in each account. So everything gets the gravy. So that was really important to me of like, let's be good people to each other. I mean, the mantra of the agency is radically people first. All the decisions are made. Are these good clients? Are we being good to their customers? Are we being good to ourselves? And that's kind of rare to find. And then, you know, have fun and make fun things. It's with all the pressure we're under and all the fear that's going on and all the cost cutting that's going on, you would think, where's the silver lining? We should be at least maybe the industry is making the best work it's ever made, but that's not happening as well either. I think there's a lot of frustrated, very talented people who are searching for, is there an agency left that's going to stand up for great ideas and have the ability to come up with them with clients who actually came to that agency for it? That's a long road for, I'm at a point in my career where I get to ask myself three things. What am I good at? What makes me happy? And what won't I put up with? And I'm in a position in this role at this special place where I get the best answers to those three questions all in the same place.
Hmm. Well, you're inspiring me. I'm sure you're inspiring all the listeners. And one little trick I think that I've learned in my short career is when I have students come in to Havas and tour, it's a reminder to me. When they walk in these walls, they see the chalkboard walls, the keg, the whatever, the pink, whatever it might be.
Right.
There, when I see there a group of 30 students from a university come in and their face lights up and they're like, you get to work here? Or if I bring my family in, or friends stop by the agency, it's a reminder to me, oh yeah, this place is really freaking cool. I forgot about that.
Dude,
we get so ingrained with the client work or whatever, or day to day and the stress, you forget what we're around and the people that make up the place. So that's a little life hack. If you bring some fresh faces in,
yeah,
it's a really good reminder, like, oh yeah, we get to do this for a living.
Yeah. I mean, and like there'll come a day when people bring their kids in and they realize yeah. An art director's office is the funnest office to be in because art directors collect toys.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Although so. I will say once I became friends with a pretty great screenwriter. He made some pretty great films and he was like, yeah. I'm so interested in what you do. I want to come by and observe what you do. And I was like, no, you don't. And he was like, no, let me come by for a day. I was like, you'll last an hour, you know? He lasts in the corner. You know, it's there's one of the great Harley Davidson headlines was somewhere at 30,000 feet, a man struggles to open a small bag of peanuts. And one year for the one show, they did a campaign based off of famous ads. It was like, you know, flipping them back. And it was the same image, but the headline was, somewhere in a gray cubicle, a copywriter struggles to come up with headlines about freedom. And you're like, yep. And that's exactly why we need work-life balance, man. That's why we need to get out of the shop. We need to see films, binge on interesting shows, read books, scroll TikTok, listen to people arguing on the street. That's where we're going to get the juice, man.
Yeah, good thing I'm not a copywriter or an art director, because all I do in my free time is talk to creatives in advertising. Tim, I appreciate you for coming on. How can people reach out to you or learn more about McGarrett Jesse? What's the process there?
Well, I'm always at tim.rohn at mcj.co, and that's .co, not com. Say howdy hi. You can reach out to me on LinkedIn, Tim Rohn on LinkedIn.
Boom.
I'm not going to give you my phone number, Gina.
Well, that's after. Tim, seriously appreciate it. I love your philosophy. I love your story. And I'm hoping people reach out and whether they have any questions or they want to work for you one day, which I'm sure I can be that kind of connector as well. So people,
Gino, right back at you. I love what you're doing. We all need a foot in the door. We all need a mentor. We all need somebody who believes in us. And frankly, as a creative director, we also want to be the person who plucked gold at a sea of students and they turn into rock stars. You're doing the good work, Gino. Thank you, brother.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Peace.